Welcome back to Intravenous. You've been tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, broadcasting from the unceded Coast Salish territories. UBC midwifery professor Dr. Saraswathi Vadam is here with me in the studio today to talk about a national project that she led, along with a team of research, clinical, and community partners called Research Examining the Stories of Pregnancy and Childbearing in Canada Today. Thank you, Dr. Vadam, for joining me today. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm fine. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. Can you give us an overview about the national study?
Yeah, so the study began when we were funded by the Canadian Institute of Health Research back in 2018. Before we even began the study and to get the funding, we worked with a multi-stakeholder group of people, including service users, to try and understand the experience of pregnancy and childbirth in Canada. We knew that's what we wanted to study because we had done it, a national study like that. We had done a provincial study in BC and had enormous response. Mm-hmm. And then we were asked to bring those same study tools to the U.S., and we expanded the ways we could ask questions and understand. And most in the BC study, we were talking about what people's preferences for care were and what they knew about different models of care and how they made decision making, and then things like respect and autonomy. Mm-hmm. When we went to the U.S., they said, "This is all great, but you also need to talk about mistreatment and how we were we were specifically working with communities of color there and people who chose to have community births. So those are two different populations. We thought we'd be doing two different studies. This was some years ago. Mm-hmm. Turns out everybody who experiences pregnancy and childbirth are really talking about the same things, about autonomy, self-determination, what they expect going in to a parenting experience, mm-hmm. and what actually happens,
right.
and the gap, mm-hmm. when there is a gap. And we found in the U.S. and in B.C. that it was not even across different communities, and that, in fact, with marginalized and historically excluded or underrepresented populations, there were not only disparities which have been reported by other researchers in outcomes, but there's also disparities in the lived experience.
Okay.
So then we asked, we came back to Canada and said, should we do this, you know, not just in BC, but, you know, Canada-wide. There had been a previous study done almost 20 years ago now called the Maternity Experience Survey.
Okay.
But they only had one or two questions that really focused in on this concept of respect.
Okay.
Respect is something that people all over the world have been talking about. The WHO has been studying it. Much of that work has been done in low-resource countries and very little in high-resource countries. So mm-hmm. we wanted to understand what's happening in Canada. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's different. Maybe we can learn something from there, because we did find these very disturbing disparities in the U.S. And colleagues of mine who used our measures found it in other countries also. So we said, let's bring it home.
Mm-hmm.
And
what did we find?
Yeah, so we found, in fact, I should say that we worked for 2 years to decide what to study, how to ask the questions,
right.
what were the right ways to ask those questions that would be, get at things and ideas and experiences that hadn't been reported before.
Okay.
Because we were really centering the voice and the experience from the service user's perspective. So not what was observed, mm-hmm. but what people said about their lived experience.
Right.
And so they helped us. We went around the world and found all kinds of ways this concept of respect was being measured. The WHO had worked with some researchers to describe what they called mistreatment,
mm-hmm.
and they described it across seven domains, so including things like informed decision making or autonomy, stigma, discrimination, health systems, respect and disrespect, and that's an
okay.
important thing. Like,
yes.
it's not always just about interaction between a person and their healthcare provider.
Right.
It's
the system.
It's the system and the access and what's available.
Mm-hmm.
So we gathered all those items. We had about 300 items, and of course we couldn't. And some of those were prompts for doing what's called focus groups, where they talk to a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew that with such a large country and so many different populations that it wasn't really practical to do a lot of focus group conversations, because that would then be the exclusion of getting a really much larger set of people to tell us. So we took 2 years to develop this a survey instrument and also prompts for meeting people where they were in their communities, at their health centers, or the community health workers that were working with different populations. We knew we wanted to make sure we had robust representation from people who had not yet been able to tell their story.
Yes.
We actually took a year just to decide on the name of the study, you know, and that's because we wanted the input of the people who were in our steering council. They're a community steering council who were representative of different populations and communities that hadn't been able to tell their story. So we had, you know, the study was for all Canadians, and we recognize that people have many identities. So, you know, you may, you know, live rurally and be Indigenous or be white. You may be, you know, Black and Indigenous. Mm-hmm. You might be somebody who is in a sexual or gender minoritized community, but, you know, have economic challenges, or be a high, you know, an academic, right? So
they, of course,
people aren't just one thing.
Right.
So we wanted to be able to represent that. So in addition to finding what we call validated ways, reliable ways to answer, we worked with people to describe the what happened to them, like if they were wearing a symbol of their religious or cultural identity. If they, these ideas didn't come from the researchers. They came from the people.
People.
This is what you need to ask, and this is what has happened. What about if someone walks in and to the room and doesn't introduce themselves? They just start looking at my chart.
Right.
Or they've been called in by my primary provider, and they're a specialist, and they come to examine me without really asking permission or explaining why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
What about if they tell me I have to make a decision, but don't take the time to explain the options and whatnot. So they themselves identified a lot of things that hadn't really come out in the details of what respect looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So we took the seven domains of mistreatment. The other interesting thing is, and particularly the indigenous people in our team, and our both in, as researchers and as steering council members, they said, well, we don't need another study to say that there are disparities. We know that. That's mm-hmm. our lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need another study to talk about how we're treated differently. That has been done in reports and in our communities. We want to know, what are we going to do about it?
Absolutely.
And in order to know that, we also have to ask questions about what does supportive, kind, exceptional
look
care
like.
Look like?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we added those. So we ended up having about 17 domains of questions.
Wow.
Cultural safety, health systems, barriers, health systems, you know, things that were facilities, things that, you know, whether or not they had family involvement. So lots of different aspects, or what we call domains, of what can make someone feel respected or disrespected.
Exactly.
So we launched, we were ready to, it took us a long time to build something that was reliable and to test those items. And so we were ready to launch in April of 2020.
Okay.
And so to answer your original question, mm-hmm. we were originally going to do it in a multimodal way, but yeah. that was, of course, the beginning of COVID.
Of course.
We had to stop, and we said, can we do this? And the people we had been working with for 2 years said, well, you have to do it. It doesn't matter. This is still important.
Yes.
So we took a few months to shift everything to online data collection.
Okay. Because I was going to ask about how the collection, you know, came to be. So it was online
It was from July of 2020 to February of 2022, so about a year and a half.
Okay.
We opened it for a year, and found that we did have representation from all provinces and territories, mm-hmm. but because during that period of time, as you might recall, that was during the time that George Floyd's murder
yes.
happened. It was also during the time when the discovery of unmarked graves here in Canada,
yes.
and the communities that we knew needed to be represented were experiencing a lot of very, very huge life challenges. And so we decided to extend the data collection by another 6 months.
Okay.
And also to give people an option of two pathways, a sort of a core data set and a more detailed data set.
Right.
We were stunned that we got what we did. You know,
wow.
we got 6,096 people who participated. And even during that time. So clearly it's
yes.
very important to people to
Absolutely.
Tell these stories. The name of the study, which you mentioned, Research Examining the Stories of Pregnancy and Childbirth in Canada Today, in part was done because they pointed out that you have to have a study name that makes people know why they are, that they're able to tell their story. So
mm-hmm.
it's very transparent,
mm-hmm.
but also something that makes them feel like they're being heard. So the first letters all spell out respect,
exactly.
Right? So now it's known as the respect study.
Absolutely. And let's talk a little bit about the findings. So now we kind of know the journey of the study itself. And what were some of the findings?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that we think of, and Canada has a global reputation of being a courteous and civil society,
mm-hmm.
And in many respects it is,
mm-hmm.
but apparently for all populations that responded to the survey, there is a disturbing amount of mistreatment. Mm-hmm. So you can say in any given country that you have things like, you know, what's expected about autonomy or even respect. And overall, you could say, okay, there's an average amount of respect that people encounter in the street or in the healthcare system or, you know, autonomy, that we believe in people's autonomy. But how is that really played out? Is it different when you're making a decision in healthcare versus, you know, whether or not what school your child goes to? Is it different whether you are making a decision about cancer treatment or heart treatment or having a baby?
Right.
And that's what we found, that in fact that there is a, particularly with autonomy, there are some things we really need to look at our system about whether the system itself allows people enough time and enough relationship and to have those conversations that let them feel like they are involved mm-hmm. in decision making. Mm-hmm. Similarly, we found that across all populations, 51% of the participants reported at least one form of mistreatment. And that's really disturbing because autonomy and respect are one thing, but mistreatment is, these are the human rights violations. Yeah. So there's 7 items that they responded to in the study. And there were actually 4 additional items which they responded to, which weren't part of our previously validated scale. And now we have 11 items. It's called mistreatment 11. So there are things like, my healthcare provider shouted at me, scolded me, refused my request for help, delayed response to help, that my physical privacy was violated, or my healthcare providers told me that something bad would happen to myself or my baby if I didn't agree to do what they want. I was forced to sign legal documents, to comply to surgery. So things that really shouldn't be happening, mm-hmm. And it's important to understand that this was a person-centered care, and the items were people were reports, what we call patient-reported experience items. So patient-reported, we have all heard about patient-reported outcomes, and those are important, but mostly those are clinical outcomes. And so there's a different kind of measure called PREMS, patient-reported experience measures. And you have to, things like something like autonomy, you can't just ask them, well, did you have autonomy or not? Right. What does that mean, really? And so we have this more detailed 7-item way of measuring that called the MADAM scale, My Autonomy and Decision Making. And it says people agree and disagree to statements like, my doctor or midwife told me I had to make a decision about something. They explained the options for care. They explained the risks and benefits to me. They took time to help me understand the information. Mm-hmm. I had enough time to consider those options. Mm-hmm. And that my decision was respected. Right. I was able to choose what I want. So they would agree and disagree to that. So they may strongly agree to one item and moderately agree or disagree with another item. But all together, they get a score.
Okay.
And so the range of scores is from 7 to 42, meaning 42 is very high autonomy, 7 is very low autonomy. Mm-hmm. So that's how we can say that, in fact, this is what it looks like in Canada versus another place, or for this population versus another. Mm-hmm. What we found in Canada, that it's not the same for every population as far as whether or not people have autonomy. Mm-hmm. And definitely disrespect and mistreatment mm-hmm. also. So recently we've published a study led by an indigenous researcher, Dr. Wanda Phillips-Beck, and she, in the analysis that we did with just the quantitative items, which is the numbered items, mm-hmm. we found that 63% of the indigenous participants experienced at least one form of mistreatment.
That's
high. So 51% for everybody, but 63% for people who self-identified as indigenous.
Yeah.
And nearly 75% experienced disrespect. So they, you know, described experiences being ignored, being left unattended, denied care, treated without consent, or verbally mistreated. Mm-hmm. We did also have a validated measure of discrimination, And this was for everybody answered it. So it was, you know, have you heard someone joking or laughing about you? Did, you know, did they, you know, use a name to call it? There's somebody, one of the other researchers in the world, created these lifetime discrimination experiences that people have. Mm-hmm. And it's probably not a surprise to say that the people who experience those things that happen that aren't happening to other people, mm-hmm. being treated differently, are reported more by people with disabilities, people who are racialized, people who are indigenous, people who have a substance use or incarceration history, people who are gender or sexual minoritized. That is known and kind of not that it should happen.
Of course.
Because that measure is there, we can now connect it to the experiences in childbirth. And, mm-hmm. you know, these experiences have lasting impacts on the health and well-being of children and families. Absolutely. And undermine trust in the healthcare system.
Absolutely. And so as we're coming to a little bit of a close here, I'm curious as to, like, after the project concluded, what would you say are some solutions?
The path forward, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I would say we did find that culture-centered care, so while we don't have enough providers, healthcare providers, or even researchers from underrepresented backgrounds, we can, as a health system, learn more about Indigenous-led and Indigenous ways of delivering care. We found that it didn't just benefit Indigenous people, but everybody. Everyone benefited from Indigenous midwifery model of care, which is a continuity model, mm-hmm. a relationship-based model. Mm-hmm. And nurse practitioners, physicians, you know, also having services closer to home. Mm-hmm. So relocation is very, very traumatic and difficult for people, and that's a health system's disrespect.
Of course.
We found that it's important to create these culturally safe and respectful environments by ensuring that providers have the training and time and resources to build trusting relationships, mm-hmm. and to support informed decision-making. That may look like accommodating access to elders and knowledge keepers or ceremony or traditional practices for mm-hmm. certain communities. It may just mean that the funding models for all types of providers who interact with the family allow for either the main provider or other providers to have the time to engage in those conversations and information.
Absolutely.
I think there's also a need for accountability, strengthening that accountability across the health system so that cultural safety, anti-oppression, anti-racism is part of professional leadership so that we reward leadership that goes
absolutely.
In that way.
Absolutely.
And then establish clear mechanisms to make sure that people can report and address mm-hmm. these things when they happen.
Absolutely. My goodness, we could talk forever. but sadly, we're coming to a close, guys. Dr. Saraswathi Vadam, I want to thank you so much for shedding insight on this national study and also talking about its importance and then also talking about solutions, because I think, you know, when I cover certain topics, we talk about the issue so much, but we don't always shed any kind of, you know, conversation around the solutions. So I appreciate that. I'm curious, if people wanted to get in touch with you, are you easily reachable by email?
Yeah,
or,
my lab is very much on the web. It's called birthplacelab.org.
Awesome.
And we do have a hub of researchers and community members and clinicians all around the country who are working on the solutions.
Yes.
It's called the Justice and Equity in Perinatal Services Hub. And so you can also find the link to that and join the hub and join the movement to change experiences.
I thank you so much. I am going to be including links in the show notes today so that people, if you are listening on the go, you are able to connect. Again, I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And just like that, we are officially at the end of the show. Up next is Democracy Now! And if you're a listener of Speak Up, tomorrow host Jesse is going to be back with some interesting stories and music. And to play us out, we are going to listen to, let's see. Ooh, let us listen to Michelle David and the True Tones with Soul Women.
Life to all who needs to inhale. My womb carries light, dark, and everything in between. I'm the essence of the sun, the mystery of the moon, the depths of the oceans, and flows of the sea. Each line I paint with the colors of prisms that infinitely expand and beyond the scope of this universe. We are the gift that God gave. When I speak, you see my soul. You hear my soul. You feel my soul. The valleys. I'm the mountains that have endless peaks. I'm simple, yet the complexity of me is vast. I am beautiful.